Hi there, and welcome to our podcast, Mindfulness at Work. I'm Cara Pollard.
Hello there, and welcome to Mindfulness at Work. I am so excited to have a longtime friend and client of mine, Christina Glickman. Christina, welcome to Mindfulness at Work.
Oh my goodness. Thank you so much. It's so good to lay eyes on you. And the moment I even look at you though, I think just about the incredible impact you had on me as a young mother and raising my kids. So it's so nice to see you.
So nice to see you. And thank you so much for being here. I think that you offer mothers and working women so much support and information. And I really wanted to have you on to talk about your most recent work of art, which is the book called Extra, The Art of Being. So we're going to get into that, but I want to go back to what you said, how we first met. So how about you describe the way that we first came into contact?
I would love to. How we first came into contact was you were in charge of a class, I guess I could say, with my kids. And it was all about, you know, an hour spent with you, from singing songs to independent movement to learning to get along with others and community. But I think the biggest thing that you provided for me, which I can say in hindsight now, was you continually gave me permission as a mother to how I was parenting. You know, it's a very scary time and you're always questioning what you're doing. It's a very big deal when you're walking into a class and your child doesn't want to go into the circle. And you constantly said, "It's okay, Christina. If Ryder wants to sit on your lap or Rocket doesn't want to participate, they're participating by being on your lap and observing." And it is such a powerful gift to give to especially mothers, that they're doing it right and that they're okay. And so that was a gift you gave to me. You know, I brought my kids there to get your incredible teaching, but what I got was really from you. And that was a validation that I really needed as a mother.
Well, thank you for that. And I think, you know, I did have a program called Away We Play, and my astute and esteemed business partner, Susan Ravine, whose birthday it
is today,
ironically, yes, certainly forged the path and led the whole curriculum of the class, because she had had a business and the only one of its kind in Chicago for 22 years. So I knew you as a mother of three, Christina, with all three of your kids. But the first time I met you, when you were Ryder's mom, your oldest child, I think I was Susan's assistant in a different program. And then she and I became business partners. So I learned those words and how to give that affirmation really from Susan, and watching how it is so important and imperative to let a child learn in the way that's comfortable for them, because that is a lifelong lesson that they take with the rest of their life. And if you quell that love of learning, they will stop the curiosity. They will stop wanting to participate in an autonomous way. And so, it was just an honor to watch you grow as a young mother of Ryder, who worried a little more. And then your second child was Racer, and you were a little less concerned by the time you had Rocket, and it was Susan had retired and it was just you and me. You were completely hands off, and you knew however she wanted to take the class was wholly appropriate. Right. So, I cherish those days, and I thank you for, actually, I thank all of the clients who trusted us and who wanted to come and start forging that and fostering that love of learning. It really, I think, is the key to parenting in many, many ways.
Well, it is. And I just want to reflect back to you, though, that I've watched you in your journey and how you've walked the walk as your children got older. And again, just as an observer of how you've led your life, and, you know, your children being older now, which mine are as well, and how those principles stay true, and in the sense of, you know, allowing them to be themselves and supportive and all of those things. So that foundation that you taught me holds true till today.
Wonderful. Yeah. And it just makes for a better connected relationship. So, I appreciate that. And yes, by the time you had your third child was when I realized that the thing that I liked talking most about was parenting, not in the sense that, oh, I'm a great parent and I have it all figured out, more in the sense that this is a struggle. And I noticed and witnessed that many people in a class of, you know, who would bring their toddlers were struggling and wanted to get this perfect production of parenting correct. Mm-hmm. And that is a fallacy. And that is something that we just dump on ourselves, that then we dump on to our children. And the kids then absorb that lack of, I'm not good enough, or I need to be better, I need to be perfect. So it was something that really intrigued me. And then I went to my training, and you were kind of watching me go through my training while I was struggling with my own teenagers. And what I loved about the training was it just reaffirmed that, yes, you need to figure out how you want to parent as a mother, and then go from there. So in your book, Extra, The Art of Being, I think that you sum up how important it is to follow your own lead and step into your own power and be your authentic self. And as women, we so often abandon ourselves and abandon who we feel our spirit is to fit into the norms of culture and society. So, I want to start by saying thank you for doing this, because I think you're brave. I think you're brave for doing this book. And can you tell me your why and what you hope people, the reader, receives from it?
Absolutely. Thank you for those kind words. My hope with the book, honestly, was that it gave women more permission to take a look at how they walk through life, the way that they dress, the way that they talk, walk, think, and be okay with just being themselves. And I really struggled with, you know, the messaging of be confident, be you is a dime a dozen. And I struggled with, why should I do this? Who wants to read my book? I'm not special. I shouldn't do this. And once I became very clear that I was doing it for me, I was doing it for me because I felt that that was a message that was important. And if one woman out there felt like they could parent in a way that was unapologetically confident, or that they could show up to something in a different way, then that was worth it for me. And I think that when we can become very, when we can honor the relationship with ourselves the most, I think it allows for the most freedom of expression. And I was able to release myself from the outcome. I mean, I really just did the book because it came pouring out of me and it felt like the right thing for me to do. I didn't have a plan. You know, I didn't have some grand plan of what I hoped to come out of it. And I've just been shocked by how it resonates with all ages and very young girls and teenagers and kids going to college. And because I think that we're constantly craving to know that we're not alone, that other people feel this way, that we're okay just as we are. We're not broken. I'm not trying to fix you, but like, you're okay. And, you know, and we need that. I do. And I think that's the power of community. And so my hope is this book is, you know, little nuggets of that. And I want you to feel better when you pick up the book, right? I want you to feel good about yourself. And maybe you're injected with a little bit of inspiration or motivation. And it can be as small as putting on a colorful shirt. I'm not talking about big things here.
Right. But in some ways you are. I mean, the book is as simple as really letting the reader into your style. You show up somewhere, and I mean your style of personality, your style of hair, your style of clothing. You certainly have your own individual style. Mm-hmm. You don't dress, you don't talk, you don't walk, you don't look like anybody else out there. To me, you really have forged your own style. If I asked you to describe it, how would you describe your style?
But isn't it funny when you say that, Cara, that I think, wow, that person must be wildly confident. And I laugh because the reason I can be myself is because I am completely okay with not being a master, not knowing what I'm doing. I'm okay not being the smartest, prettiest, best parent, like all those things. And so the more that I can say that I don't know, the more confident I feel. So I think it's kind of ironic when you describe that person, I'm like, oh, who's that? I'd like to know who that is.
Well, you make it look good. And I know did Adam do all the photographs?
Yeah.
And so he did just some of the most amazing photographs for Away We Play. And he does have an amazing gift where whatever he captures is something spectacular. Mm-hmm. So it's funny you say that, because he even took a picture of me blowing bubbles. Mm-hmm. And he made not me look spectacular, not the bubbles look spectacular, but the fact that I was blowing bubbles looked mm-hmm. spectacular and interesting. And so it actually must deepen your confidence when he captures you on camera, because it does look like this woman is so self-assured and confident. And so it's really good to hear that authentic, vulnerable side of you. That's like, I don't know if this necessarily looks great.
But you also have to know is that, yes, I think that Adam captures feeling. Uh-huh. No, and I used to think it was just because it was my kids and I liked the pictures. But once he started doing it for other people, I realized that it wasn't. But so the book was, with those pictures, started with me saying to Adam, why don't you start to take some pictures of me in clothing? Because I really like clothing. I'm trying to get my creative side back. So all the pictures that are even in the book were never created for a book.
Right.
They were just us playing around.
Yeah.
And so it's funny to me that the two of us just sat down and did a book, really. Like it wasn't, and that's the other message that I continually like to share, is that you get to do what you want to do. And so, you know, even in the first few words of my book, I say, I'm not a writer because I don't think I'm a writer. And that whole idea of that we are allowed to show up in this world with whatever hopes and dreams we might have. And the only one holding us back is really ourselves. And mm-hmm. we know that. And so when you give yourself permission, you suddenly have a world open to you that you didn't know was open, because you were so worried about the success of it or the outcome or the fear of judgment or rejection or failure and all the things. And so for me, it was a real reflection on, I'm doing this for me. And even if just my friends and family and someone as sweet as you bought the book and said, we love it, Christina, but it really sucked. Nobody's dying. And that will always be my benchmark for the consequence to my action. My people are safe and loved. I can pretty much handle anything else.
Yeah, that's so. To me, you're talking a lot about the process and not the result.
Yeah.
And I have to talk to parents about that all the time. You don't ever end or arrive or, you know, reach an end destination, and neither do your children. And so, you know, it's not the A, it's the process of striving for playing basketball, striving for a good grade. I would much rather have somebody learn during, you know, history than arrive at the A having not learned anything.
I mean, Cara, you need to be on every platform of any power or privilege screaming this message out, because I think that we are truly destroying our children mm-hmm. because we are not letting them do the journey, be who they're going to become, you know, and it's all based on our own parenting fears. So the work you are doing to me is like securing the mental health of our future, because these kids can't live up to this narrative that has been put on them.
Yeah. I mean, it's so true. And I do think that the one good thing about the pandemic is that it did make us shut down literally so that we did have to spend time together and look and see what was in front of us, as opposed to, I think, you know, women just had it really rough. We went from being shamed for staying home, being shamed for going to work, being shamed for not accomplishing leadership roles like men were. And so we know how to get things done. So we got our spreadsheets together and our checklist and literally broke our backs doing two jobs, which was the majority of the work at home and the majority of work at work, proving ourselves to be better than anyone else, you know, outdoing the jobs that we had to do in both areas. And then we had to add on being a teacher because, you know, school was in our home. So now we were doing three jobs. But the problem with that is for our children is that the only way to do that is to bring a spreadsheet and checklist and a very organized, you know, kind of philosophy, which might not be applicable to the child that we're actually trying to raise and teach and, you know, love up. And so you can't checklist love. You can't checklist knowing who your child is. You can't checklist connection. It just is. And so when we are doing all that in an angst-ridden state, we're dumping that anxiety onto our kids, which is why they're stressed out, lonely, have many issues, you know. And so that is why I'm trying to help parents get back to what is it that you really want, and then let's align your actions to those those intentions. But one of my favorite quotes from your book reminds me of what we're talking about here, which is kind of that it isn't all about the end result. And you say, the world is aching for you to do what you love. Look for it, find it, hold on to it, then let it go. When it doesn't give you joy, the search is the real happiness. The search is what's brave. Finding it isn't.
Yeah. Ooh, that almost gets me a little weepy just because of, I feel like I really walk that walk. And I know that my kids do too. And I think the more that we share, you know, the power of storytelling, right? And the more that we share that it is about it. And that's why I think all of these things we talk about are almost like buzzwords, but until you put them into practice, and, you know, you can't also manufacture being present, right? You can't, people ask me all the time, because listen, I get a whole list of things I don't do well, but I know I'm a good parent. Like when I say good parent, I mean, my kids are safe and loved. That's what I mean by good parent. And I often say your children will role model you. If I want my children to grow, be kind and compassionate, I don't care if I talk about it all day long. If they don't see me doing that, they aren't going to do that. So when they ask about what are certain things that we do or in our home, I always kind of go back to basics. It's like, you know, your children see what your priorities are. It's very simple. You know, if you're not looking at somebody in the eye or taking a moment to just take a beat and say, how are you? Or to be real and to do all these things. And that's why that quote is so powerful to me, because, you know, the present self, which is so difficult to sit in because we worry about the past and we worry about the future and all the things. But the reality is that, you know, tomorrow's not given. And so today I need to enjoy the journey I'm on. I need to accept that success is inevitable for me and my children and everyone else, and really sit in the power of that unknown and that magic. And I know that's hard, and I'm not minimizing it or trivializing it, but I don't think it's a productive way to live any other way. It could be because I've had a lot of loss in my life or whatever the case is, that I just feel that today is, for me, a shot I don't want to give up. And by that, I don't mean productive. I don't mean that I'm going to go kill it at work and then I'm going to sell a million books. I mean, am I joyful? Do my kids feel okay? Is my husband all right? Like, you know, did I make something happen for somebody that made them feel good? And to me, that's like a life well lived, you know. And people know this because we talk about it, but how you make people feel is so important. And I feel that we're all responsible for that energy, and it's things that you can do every single day. And I just don't think you can minimize that, especially like you were just talking about in a pandemic and how we're struggling as mothers. Like, we need each other to share stories and you know, connect and be present with each other more than ever.
For sure. And it reminds me of Maya Angelou's quote, which is one of my favorite, that, you know, people aren't going to remember what you said. They're not going to remember what you did, but they're going to remember how you made them feel. And I say that all the time. I show that at the end of my parenting presentations mm-hmm. because they're not going to remember their test score in math in second grade or eighth grade. Right. They're not going to remember if they won or lost the soccer game, but they're going to remember how you made them feel afterwards. That's a memory sure. that becomes a pattern in their life. And so I'd love to go way back to a story you tell in the book, Christina, and it was about your high school college counselor, and they kind of told you where you could and couldn't go. And you didn't allow this person to define where you wanted to go to school based on a test score. And I'm wondering where you think that knowing came from.
You know, I ask myself that question often. And I feel like I had a very, very powerful father in the sense that man, every single day of his life, made me feel special and seen. He would look at me and I swear magic shot out of his eyes. And I'm not rewriting history because he's no longer here. It's just the truth. It's how he made me feel and how I hope I make my children feel. And I think that strong sense of self came from that I'm good enough and I'm deserving enough. Now, I was never the smartest. My ACT score was like, were you even in the room? You know, and I just knew when this college counselor was saying, even though I got straight A's, and the reason I got straight A's was because I worked hard. Yeah. It was never easy for me. I was the kid with tutors but he said, well, your ACT score is so low. You really shouldn't go away to college. Maybe you should just stay home, maybe go to a community college, which nothing's wrong with that. But I had different plans. And I just remember thinking to myself, no, I work hard. I can do this. Mm-hmm. And I think it came from growing up in an environment that was really safe and knowing that being instilled in me that I was good enough. I was just good enough. And it wasn't because I was good at something. I wasn't really good at anything. I mean, I really wasn't that kid, but I knew that I was special, you know?
Yeah, that's such a great story. And to know that your dad really was the impetus for some of that. And I feel very similar to how my dad looks at me. I mean, mm-hmm. he really does act like the sun and moon sets on me. And my mom does too. And so I said that to somebody when I was a young parent and they're like, well, they're your parents, but shouldn't they? And I was like, well, but I don't think all parents do. It's just, and this is the biggest message too, that I give as a parent coach, that's so important, is just because your child exists is the reason that you should be enthusiastic, not because of something they did. And, you know, my husband never went through any parenting courses, but he used to almost embarrass me sometimes if we were at a party or at a place and he would walk in and make a beeline for my kids like he hadn't seen them. It's just been 7 hours and he would walk in before he said hi to anyone else. And I would be like, oh my gosh. And my mom said, isn't that the most amazing thing?
Oh,
and
it gives me chills.
Yeah.
Love that big. And that's another thing that I feel so important about. It's like normalizing how we love. And I'm a lover. You don't have to wear it loud and proud as I do, but there is just there will be no shortage of that. Right. And, you know, I think even as I was older, I remember my dad, I was, you know, 30 years old and he was over in my kitchen and he would just be looking at me. And of course I'd be annoyed. I'm like, Dad, why are you looking at me? And he would just look at me and be like, I just love you so much. Well, now as a parent, I get it.
Yeah.
Right? And so how powerful is that? And that's why this whole badge of busyness, as we're running around like hurricanes and tornadoes, I'm not proud of, I don't want to suggest that because there's no validation for me that I'm important because I'm busy. In fact, I'm embarrassed.
Right.
My schedule's so busy. I'm like, that is my, I have the agency to choose. And yes, I have to have a livelihood and I have to work and I have to do these things, but it's that sense of, even when I'm working a lot, for me to say to my kids, look, I'm sorry, I got to work. I'm right over here. But I believe that if you ask them, would everything stop for them? Of course. It would.
Yeah. So agree with the, and I've been saying this for a while. It's embarrassing when it used to be for sure, like 5 years ago, how are you? Your automatic response out of your mouth was, oh, I'm so busy. Right. So much so that I've noticed a couple people who call me say, oh, hi, are you busy? And I'm like, no, I'm not busy at all. Like, I'm never too busy for you. Did I ever act that way? I'm so sorry if I did, because that's a horrible message. And if you're that busy, it actually, you know, leads to disconnection and who wants that? So, and you mentioned it in the book, there's a quote, I don't know if I, have a post-it for it, but it was about that rest is just as important with production. And I think, you know, the pandemic has shown some really progressive businesses that it's super important for somebody to close their computer, at 5 o'clock and to stop getting the emails after that, because they might have to help, you know, their kids. So I think that's very important, but apologizing to your kids is something that's, you know, so important to do. And your words of role modeling for your children is the best thing that you could ever do. That's what I teach, but it's a very hard thing to live, right? Sometimes what we're doing isn't what we think we're doing, right? We might not even be aware. It takes a lot of self-actualization and self-relational awareness to know how what we do and say lands on someone else. But I'd love for you, Christina, to turn to your book. There's so many great stories, but this one is just one of my ultimate favorites. And it's about when Rocket comes out of school and someone talks about your hair. But for context, I'd like to go back a little bit before we get there. So if you wanted to tell the story first about your hair and how you came about to get your hairstyle, which it seems like must have been your style now for how long? How long has your hair been in this style?
I mean, it has to be 18 years.
Okay.
A long time.
So, and same color too?
The colors changed.
Okay.
But always aggressive.
Okay. So can you describe your hairstyle and how it came to be?
Sure. I mean, it's short, platinum, kind of spiky, stands up, little mohawk-y, I guess. And it came to be just because I used to work in advertising and I was on a shoot and the stylist, my hair was, you know, long. It had been my whole life. And she kept saying, you know, I want to cut your hair and make it a different style and it wouldn't be fun. And I kept saying, no, 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 my hair is my security. I don't want to do it. And, you know, by the end of a 2-week photo shoot, she had turned it into this, which is short. And I cried and thought I looked like a boy and all the rest. And even though I didn't think of it at the time, I think it was a turning point for me because I had to own something I didn't really want to own. And it's important too, to point out that it's sort of like it stuck to me in a way that I wasn't planning on. I wasn't planning to make such a bold statement walking into a room. That was never a part of the plan. And so I think it's interesting to look back at how we sort of evolve and shape ourselves into things. And so it really just became a part of who I was. And now, of course, you know, the older I get, I mean, the more you tell me not to do something or to, I can't help myself now.
Right. So the more that people say, you better change your hairstyle, that you've had that for 18 years, the more you dig your heels in and you're like this. And I love how you didn't know at the time, but when you look back, like this was a turning point for me. It now has become part of your identity is what I would say. And you don't want to change it, but it may cause you strife, it seems like, or it may be a point of even contention or sadness. So fast forward to the story with Rocket. Would you just either read it or summarize it, whichever you feel more comfortable
Sure. with? I can summarize it. Okay. My daughter Rocket, who was 8 at the time at school, she basically came into the car one day and she was really upset. And I said, you know, what's wrong? And, you know, she just said, a friend of hers saw me at the school play. And she said, you know, why does your mama look like that? And that I looked weird. And I mean, to be clear too, my platinum spiky hair, I'm quite sure I had on like a polka dotted jacket with big sleeves. Like I'm sure I did something crazy because it's, but again, and I mean it wholeheartedly, this is how I show up in the world that makes me feel the most whole. I cannot show up another way. Mm-hmm. So that's just the truth, which is, you know, a little bit not the norm. And you know, she, you know, my first thought was when Rocket was crying, she was saying that she had to sort of defend me about why her mom looked like this. So I was so upset because I thought, here's my little daughter here trying to defend, you know, why her mother looks like this. And I sort of hugged her. And number one, I was never going to apologize for how I looked or how I walked into a room. Mm-hmm. And I just talked to her about how words are so powerful and how it really hurt my feelings. And she saw me cry because I was sad that my daughter had to defend me in that way. And, you know, I took that moment as a gift to tell her I love myself and I'm not going to change for anyone mm-hmm. or anything, and not for her either. If she said to me, Mama, can you not do that? I would have said, no, I can't. That I need to show up as myself. And so again, I used that moment to show her that words are so powerful and you have the opportunity to use them for good. So there were a lot of lessons in there. And, you know, again, you talk about role modeling. It's like, you want your kids to see that you have feelings and that you're real too. And that, you know, kindness goes a long way. And so again, I think if we are open and present for the opportunity to be with our children, those are life's, you know, biggest announcements that come in unannounced.
Yeah.
And when you're present to them, they're big.
Yeah. I read that three times and got tears probably all three times. And the reason being is, well, first of all, I know Rocket.
Yeah.
I taught her. And secondly, I just couldn't have imagined playing that out if I was a director and somebody said, what is the best, you know, way a parent mm-hmm. could respond to this? It was so perfect. And not that parenting is perfect and mm-hmm. not that you're perfect, but I mean, it was so real. It was so authentic. There were so many life lessons in it. I could imagine most people, including myself, either saying, well, who cares what she thinks, or she's just a mean girl, or, oh my God, I have to change my hair. I can never go like that again. I'm ruining my daughter, or just a million myriad of things that do not, that would miss the point. But to say, I'm hurt that hurt you and that somebody talked about your mom that way, but I'm not going to change is just, and to hug her with tears and to show her that you can be hurt, but you can stay the course, be who you are. Yeah. It just is beautiful, Christina. It was a beautiful story. And it really resonated with me as far as what a really appropriate and beautiful response would be. Wow, and you know, you could put so many other things in. Yeah. You know, you're an extra example, because your hair is extra, your style is extra. But imagine that even on a smaller level happening. And if we could have that response, it would be beautiful. So speaking of your style, there's another point that you discuss the names of your children. And so we're just talking about Rocket, but can you tell me the names of your kids and why they came to be, and then how hard it was sometimes to kind of defend them? And I can relate to that in a couple ways.
Yeah. Well, you know, my oldest, Emily, I did not name her. So that was like easy. And then over the years, she's upset that she doesn't have a name like her siblings. But Ryder, Racer, and Rocket. And, you know, I think the story here is, again, I never set out to have like weird kid names, or, I mean, I never romanticized getting married even. Like, I just wasn't a dreamer in that way. And when Ryder was born, that was a weird name at that time. It's not anymore. And then when Racer came along, I saw it in a magazine somewhere and I thought she was going to be a boy, but she came out and I wanted to stick to it. And then by the time Rocket came, that was just a, well, you can't have Ryder, Racer, and Sally. It's over. Like, it's just over. So that was definitely, and I even had like my sweet mother-in-law was like, wouldn't it be funny though, if you just went some, like did a normal name. And I was like, that's not going to work on me. I know what you're saying. We're done. We're going there. But again, I think the story for me in that is I say, cause you know, sweet Adam would just pretty much name anything. He didn't even, he was fine. Is that I never wanted to do anything to serve anyone else. It's what felt right to me. And one thing, not to be on a tangent here, but something that you teach, I'm sure often, is that when you can become as clear as possible on your own core values as a parent, it helps you guide everything in your life. And, you know, even in the pandemic of, do you send your kid back 2 hours? Do you not send them back? Do you send them on a traveling basketball team? Do you, I feel if you are not very clear, and I don't mean right, just clear on how you want to raise your family, and it can change, my goodness, we're all evolving, it's really hard. And back to even just like the names, I just never questioned what I wanted to do, mm-hmm. you know, and that sounds simple, but it's not, because you get all the side eyes and the judgment and the why are you doing that, and I just would kind of go back to, it's not your business, like it's just mine, right. And I'm okay with that. I know that's hard, but I think that we can practice that, right? With more intention.
Yeah. And, well, you even give an example of practicing it. So this is applicable, again, to yours is different. It's about naming your children Ryder, Racer, and Rocket. Other people's are, am I going to allow my teenager to go to the party? You know, I'm not saying that you can't change your mind.
Of course.
But if you have a knowing that it's dangerous and you just know that it's a dangerous thing, then when you say to your child, you're just not going to go to the party, not in a mean way, maybe you're even validating that it's sad for them, but it's in a way that your internal compass is so stuck on north, you know, that you feel right. Now, again, it's not to say that you can't change. Maybe if you had a fourth kid, maybe it would have been Sally. It does, you know, you can change how you feel. But if your inside is saying, oh gosh, I named my kids these names and I don't know if I feel strong enough to do it, then you're doomed. Because I think that you were able to brace yourself. You said when some woman come up you at the zoo, you were ready for the side eye. You know, when you, she said, what, oh, newborn baby, what's your baby's name? And you said, Racer, and you're ready for her to roll her eyes. And she looked at you, I think because of your knowing and your, you know, authenticity. And it was just, that's her name. She said, oh, she'll probably be president someday. And had you said it with trepidation, see, people respond to the way you are. And that is inclusive and most importantly in parenting. Yeah. If kids feel that you're not sure about what you're saying, you're in trouble.
But I love, Cara, too, what you talk about though. And I think it's so important as we parent, one, that we are allowed to change our mind, that we don't have to dig our heels into one way of doing it. If we decide that we've learned more or we've changed, like that's okay. But I do think that it is a worthwhile, and I'm sure you do all the teachings on this, to really get aligned with what are the values in your family, because then your kids kind of know, like it's no surprise that my kids have been on massive lockdown. They wouldn't think otherwise.
Right.
Again, no judgment, but they know how we operate. So it wouldn't even cross their minds that their parents would not actually act like this.
Right.
So it's just kind of clear. You just, it makes them, not that they enjoy that, but they become comfortable because they kind of know how we operate.
Yeah. It's knowing what to expect also helps a child. And I don't mean in an authoritarian type of way. But what I mean is, so this is an example that's better, I think. So I have a lot of clients that have come to me. They have teenage boys. They maybe smoke some pot. And then they notice that they're smoking pot every day.
Yeah.
And so what they say to me is, well, I just wish that they could smoke pot normally. And I'm like, well, what does that mean? Right. Well, like not overdo it, not get it to the point where they're smoking, they're using it to like relax. And now they've smoked it so much that they've become paranoid, whatever the case is with this parent. But when they have this inner, like, I wish they could just, but that's not actually what's happening. If they're smoking pot to the point that you know it's dangerous, but you wish that they could do it in what you think is normal, that's a mixed message. So sometimes you're mad when you find pot on them, and sometimes you're not. And sometimes you ignore the fact that you've smelled pot, and sometimes you don't. And that's where they feel untethered. So, you know, you can't scream at them one day and not the other. They really need to know what to expect. And some parents might be like, yeah, it's completely fine if you smoke pot, you know, once in a while. But boy, when your grades start dipping and, you know, we're seeing that somebody's hijacked you, you have to step into no more. And that's very hard for parents to do.
Well, I think also too, because there's that whole sentiment of, we want our kids to like us.
Right.
You know, no matter what. I mean, whether it's taking them off of an Xbox or, you know, I always said, get comfortable with being uncomfortable how your kids feel about you, you know, in those moments, because, you know, again, it's all how you parent. There's no right or wrong, but I'm not here to be your friend right now in this moment. I'm a new parent. And I think that I myself have had to really be okay making them unhappy for things that I didn't either approve, want to do, and not explaining also. I mean, again, it depends on the age, of course,
right,
of what you're talking about. But I think that it's a work in progress.
Yes.
And that's why people are lucky to have you, because it's hard.
Well, I think that your book, in a sense, sums up what you just said about parenting, which is get comfortable with the uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And it's whether it's your parenting, you know, sometimes you're going to have to make very uncomfortable decisions. And the more emotional or resisting or defensive you get, the worse it will be for you in the long run. And the same with the way you embrace your style, Christina, whether it's your hair or what you wear, or the way you go after work, or the way you go after just being the person you want to be in the world unapologetically. Mm-hmm. I think when you can be comfortable with the uncomfortable, it's when you, many doors open for you, I think. Yeah. And I think this book really sums that up. Do you have a favorite quote or page or anything that you want to share?
You know, I think that one of my most favorite is probably the first one I ever really wrote down, which was, here is what I know that I don't know. There is power in the unknown. Sit in the I don't know. It's a confident place to be. Trust me. Because again, when I look back to where I am today, which I know in 10 years, I will feel different. The one thing that I'm continually aware of is what I don't know. You know, I used to say 20 years ago, I would do this or I would do that. Now my first reaction when somebody tells me a situation or I don't say, well, here's what I would do. First of all, if I haven't walked in your shoes, I'm not really sure what I would do. And I think that the air of not knowing to me suggests more confidence than when you come into a room and you think you have the answers. Mm-hmm. Because I want to listen. I want to be able to, you know, understand someone and be open-minded. And so much of that is with parenting, and that comes in the way of respecting your child as a human being from a very early age, you know, respecting that they have big feelings and being okay with those. And so those threads, I think, are just constant. I think they apply to everything. They apply to your friendships, your spouse, to all of it.
Yeah. The not knowing is, you know, the title of this podcast is Mindfulness at Work. And I really think that sitting in the unknown and not thinking you have all the answers is mindfulness at work. Both just mindfulness being at work, but also I think it does fall over into the workplace, because wow, has this year shown us in glaring red lights that we have to be comfortable with the unknown every other day. Right. It's an unknown that we've had to traverse. Yeah. And if we could traverse it in a choice of being angst-ridden and upset and kind of defensive or slamming up against it. But the people who are in the decision-making seats have really had to embrace the unknown. You know, we don't know if you can come back to work. We don't know how it's going to look. Now there's surveys going out to all people, and particularly, you know, working women. How are they going to come back to work? How are we going to put the 2 million women who've been pushed out of the workforce back at work so that they can feel whole? Well, it's unknown, but we've got to start, you know, figuring it out slowly.
Yep.
But nobody can say that they've got the answer today, because I don't think anybody does. It's going to be a work in progress. So I love that your life is a work in progress. Mm-hmm. Your book, probably you can add to it at some day. It's a work in progress.
Yes.
Being a mother is a work in progress. And Christine, I think your wisdom is so deep, and I thank you for sharing it with the world. And I think if anyone wants to see beautiful pictures, have some beautiful inspiration, they should order Extra, XTRA, The Art of Being by Christina Glickman. I ordered it from Amazon, but
you're so sweet. Well, I mean, thank you for having me here. You know that I have admired you for years, and the work that you are doing could not be more important. And I am so grateful for all the people that you touch. So especially me.
Well, thank you so much, Christina. Thanks for being a guest, and we'll probably try to have you on again. It was so worthwhile. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Mindfulness at Work. If you felt inspired by our conversation, we hope you'll share our podcast with your friends and colleagues.